follow that, though.
Oh, my gosh. What wonderful energy. I invite you to picture the Earth floating in space, framed in black in the expanse of infinite darkness that is our universe. Our blue planet spins. Do you remember when you first saw the images that came back of our Earth from space? From that vantage point, we see our vast planet looking tiny. We understand now that we are all connected. We are bound together, floating on our blue boat home. Another image. A cart clatters along a dusty road. A bell tolls, signaling that worship is soon to begin. Cows with bells around their necks walk calmly along and are soon joined by people, grandparents, children, parents with babies, all making their way to the Unitarian Church in the village, where the ancestors have been worshiping for more than 400 years. In Transylvania, which is in Romania, in Eastern Europe, thousands of villages are Unitarian. Parishioners make their way to church each Sunday with hands gnarled from years of hard physical labor. They have suffered under totalitarianism, and have seen people tortured and have experienced betrayal. They are tired, but the sharing of communion sustains them. They speak of how they are literally nourished by the ancient tradition that they carry forward. They find meaning in the preservation of their faith, knowing that they must pass it on to the next generation, as the previous generations did for them. Lest you think that we are nothing but different, know that we are the same in many significant ways. They sing songs that we know and love. They drink plum brandy and they dance. Their children listen to rock music and post on Facebook. They bury their dead, they marry their beloveds. They live faithful lives, nourished by the love of God and the community that sustains them. Another image, a barn filled with dairy cows. Sitting on a hillside surrounded by woods, the red barn and its two silos, that's no longer the home of calm, contented cows. Now it is a thriving Unitarian Universalist community. 50 years ago, a group of liberal-minded folks decided that they wanted to pull together a church, a place to raise their children together. Why drive 20 miles to the university area of town to meet with the UU community that existed there? Why not start one in their own neighborhood? First, they gathered around a speaker as a service was broadcast over the phone, beamed all the way to them from that existing church 20 miles away. But they had the audacity to think that perhaps they could grow something of their own in their own neighborhood. I personally am very glad that they did. That dairy barn that became a church is my home church, the UU Church of the North Hills in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That is the congregation in which I was raised, religiously educated, and eventually ordained. That place went from being a barn holding dairy cows to a barn holding a beautiful light-filled sanctuary, the most cutting-edge green classrooms for religious education, and a stunning memorial garden. But it is a mistake to think that the founders of that church made something out of nothing. The truth of the matter is that our faith has been nourished, sustained, and strengthened by people we have never seen, will never meet, and can only imagine. Unitarian Universalist minister Peter Rabel paraphrased a passage from Deuteronomy. He wrote, "We build on foundations we did not lay. We warm ourselves at fires we did not light. We sit in the shade of trees we did not plant. We drink from wells we did not dig. We profit from persons we did not know. We are ever bound in community." The church that used to be a dairy barn now nourishes countless members, friends, children, and people in the community because some brave souls thought beyond themselves and planted a church for the community that they could not possibly have foreseen. But with faith, they moved forward. The villagers in northeastern India surely don't have much disposable income. Their waking hours are not filled with plans to pick up the latest version of the iPhone, book a vacation to soothe the winter blues, or planning to stop after work to go clothes shopping or meet a friend for dinner. And yet, even in the most humble of circumstances, they take a scoop of rice out first. First, before even cooking the food to feed their own family. And as an aside, I'm reminded, and I feel the weight, the responsibility to share this horrifying statistic with you. Did you know that statistically, Unitarian Universalists are the second highest earning religious group, statistically. And do you have any idea where we might fall in terms of, in relation to other religious groups, in terms of our giving to support our own faith? Dead last. There's something wrong with that picture. We can do better, and we must. Your beautiful congregation is thriving. It is vibrant. It is historic, having been in existence for 147 years. You've got 11 small group ministry groups. You have become known as the headquarters for the Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service, mobilizing recently, I think, 450 volunteers, engaged in more than 30 projects, making a tangible difference in your community. On any given Sunday, one might encounter mariachis during a Day of the Dead celebration, or an Indian tabla dance group during Diwali, or a Kwanzaa service, or a New Orleans jazz funeral complete with the coffin in the front, an amazing jazz band. Or you might happen upon one of the earth-based services, or perhaps the Seder dinner. You have an active green sanctuary program, helping people to live their faith by lowering their carbon footprint. You have a strong and diverse religious education program for children and adults, beautiful, nourishing music, and wonderful worship. You can be proud that your minister, Kent, is the president of the board of the UU Pennsylvania Legislative Ministry, and that your congregation has been part of the Mosaic Makers Project, a 2-year commitment along with 9 other cutting-edge UU congregations to engage specifically with issues relating to becoming a truly multicultural faith. These are all amazing things, but there is something that is sometimes more invisible, that is perhaps more remarkable, that takes place here. And that is the way in which this church touches each and every one of your lives. Each of you are cherished, supported, and nudged toward personal transformation week upon week upon week. As a representative from the larger association of which you are a part, I want you to know that we want to watch and learn from you. You are growing, and we have our eye on you. I also want to say thank you this morning. Congregations in our tradition are each asked to send in an annual program fund contribution to the association, and for many years your church didn't, but last year you did. It is noticed, and it is appreciated. As Kent mentioned a moment ago, our Unitarian Universalist Association is the entity that connects us to the larger faith, mobilizing us to stand on the side of love for justice on a big scale, larger than we could do alone. It is our UUA that provides religious education curricula, such as OWL, the Our Whole Lives curriculum, district and regional services of all kinds, and the settlement process for congregations looking for a minister. The UUA also supports the credentialing process for ministers, assuring that the professionals that serve our communities are excellent. So thank you for being stewards of our larger faith. I hope you will strengthen your resolve and continue doing so, because it really does make a difference. Have you ever met a group of UUs who were trying to do something visionary? I will just tell you that we are not always very easy to work with. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that the people who wanted to create a Unitarian Universalist presence in my hometown did not always agree as they made their way forward. You have to know that things were not always easy. There were controversies, there were bumps in the road, and people left the church. There were close votes, and there were arguments, and it could have easily gone another way. But they persevered, and this year are celebrating their 50th anniversary. The first president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Dana McLean Greeley, understood the impulse that motivated my home church's founders. At the time of the consolidation of the Unitarians and the Universalists in the early 1960s, he wrote the following. Liberal religion is not an institution. It is a movement in history, a set of values, and a way of life. More important than the merger of two denominations is the quickening of the principles for which they exist. We believe in change and growth. We must be honest enough to detect our weaknesses and brave enough to assert and develop our strengths. If we have faith in the future, we must be convinced that our great heritage is insignificant in comparison with the role of liberal religion for tomorrow. Without vision, we would perish, and that role would be realized by others in our stead. But with vision and a commensurate commitment, our own efforts may prove worthy of the promise of yesterday. So I want you to know this morning that your faith matters. Your willingness to be brave and visionary makes a difference. You need to know that it makes the world a better place when you follow your beliefs, actively live out your principles, give generously, and think big on behalf of our faith. This is not hypothetical. It is not a possibility. It is a fact. And I can prove it to you by inviting you to simply look around the room and make eye contact with some of the other people who are here in this room who would not be here in this place if it were not for some radical group of Unitarians who dared to believe that they could grow a church. This beautiful and historic building wouldn't be here. and the children we have raised in this tradition wouldn't be out in the larger world living our values in the public square. And the world needs us. I cried in the airport recently. I was sitting in the waiting area preparing for my connecting flight to start boarding. And the airport television channel was broadcasting, really blaring is a more appropriate description, above my head, and it held everybody captive in the waiting room. There was no way to really avoid what was being said on the television. The television told the horrific story of the young woman who had just secretly given birth to twins in the bathroom of the home that she shared with her parents. The babies were born full term, but her parents hadn't known that she was pregnant. She was so terrified to tell her father about the fact of her babies that when they were born, she killed them. There is no response but to weep. I thought it was not necessary for such news to be broadcast throughout the airport terminal about this private tragedy, and I'm sorry to bring it into this sacred space today. It's a horrifying story. There are lots of horrifying stories that surround us all of the time. I happened to hear this one. Try as I might, I couldn't avoid it. And so right there in the airport terminal, I wept for the babies. I wept for the young woman, and I wept for her family because they now have to live in the hell that they have made here on this earth. And there's another reason why I wept. Such a tragedy is preventable and so unnecessary. And we have a role. Our tradition, a church which provides an open conversation about sexuality and healthy choices, is life-saving. Not hypothetically, but actually. Why are we not on the mountaintops shouting about the existence of such a life-saving place? If that young girl and her family had the rapport established to be open and honest and supportive of one another and to respectfully discuss the reality of the choices she was facing, there might have been a different outcome. We know about the LGBT youth who are struggling to believe that they are not alone. We know that many of them, too many of them, run away from home, live in fear or in the closet, or tragically take their own lives. Do you know what we have in our faith? The preciousness of the message that all are welcome? This is just one of the life-saving aspects of our faith. And there is also another kind of life-saving that happens in our congregations. When you find your true spiritual home, your life begins to move on a different trajectory, and miracles unfold. When you find your calling and begin to live into your own ministry, your life is transformed. When you grow spiritually, you evolve in health-giving ways. You begin to know your life's purpose and begin to exude gratitude and give back in any and all ways that you can. This is also life-saving. It is life-giving, life-affirming, life-saving. Right now, Unitarian Universalism, I believe, is on the cusp of something extraordinary. We are more convinced that we have something important to offer the world. We are taking ourselves seriously as a people of faith. We're pausing to light the chalice. We're speaking up about our faith to our friends and neighbors. We are standing on the side of love and acting for justice together. And we're connecting with neighboring congregations. And we're beginning to think that this faith is worth supporting with our sacrificial giving. More and more of us are tithing 10% of our income to feel what it is like to give at a level that really demonstrates our love for our church and what it might yet become. I read yesterday that Obama gives 14% of his income, just to give an example of how some people give. In other words, I think we are starting to get religion. We're embracing the fact that leadership is a good thing. We are talking of empowering our leaders to lead and help us move forward. We are preparing to grow, support, embrace, and trust leaders to take us in new directions. We must prepare ourselves not only to be relevant for today, but for the future. So the leaders we turn to must know how to lead us boldly into new territory. I have to acknowledge that some of these evolutions will certainly be terrifying for those of us who are used to a certain expression of Unitarian Universalism. But be not afraid. This is not actually about us. It is about transforming our faith for the future, for generations to come. We need to throw ourselves into that project with everything we've got. We will need all of the trust we can muster, all of the courage we can scare up, all of the faith we can find, and we will need lots and lots of money. I'm just telling you. As leaders in one of the most vibrant congregations in the denomination, you can help with each of those things, and you are being called on now to do so. We're also crossing borders, borders of race and class, borders of language, borders of generations and technology, borders dividing those who are churched from those who are unchurched. And we are thinking of ourselves now as a faith movement rather than simply as an association of sometimes isolated congregations. The implications for this paradigm shift are astounding, and the stakes are very high. As I said when I was talking with the kids, in this present ministry, I have the great privilege of traveling quite a bit around the country and hearing the faith journeys of countless Unitarian Universalists. And I've also heard these stories from my friends in Transylvania and India and the UK and Australia and Africa and the Philippines. People are discovering our movement online and having the experience that many of us can relate to, recognizing that they have always been UU, but didn't know it, because they simply didn't know Unitarian Universalism existed. But the internet has changed all of that. So now we have UU groups emerging in Cuba, in the Middle East, in places such as Iraq, in China. The possibilities for our faith are astounding. And I can tell you that it is growing at such a rate in Africa that if things go there as the leaders would hope, it could outgrow Unitarian Universalism in this country within the next decade. They're serious about it. They're on fire about it. The barn, the village, the globe, in fact, the future. These are all affected by the choices that we make now. Your charge, your mission, if you should choose to accept it, and I hope that you will, is to live into the promise of yesterday. So again, in closing, the words of Dana McLean Greeley. Liberal religion is not an institution. It is a movement in history, a set of values, and a way of life. More important than the merger of two denominations is the quickening of the principles for which they exist. We believe in change and growth. We must be honest enough to detect our weaknesses and brave enough to assert and develop our strengths. If we have faith in the future, we must be convinced that our great heritage is insignificant in comparison with the role of liberal religion for tomorrow. Without vision, we would perish, and that role would be realized by others in our stead. But with vision and a commensurate commitment, our own efforts may prove worthy of the promise of yesterday. My friends, believe that your faith matters, that it makes a difference what you do and how you do it, but most of all, it matters that you do it for the sake of people you will never meet, whose lives will be transformed. Be the movement you can be. Live into the promise of yesterday. Respond with gratitude for the blessings you have inherited. Give of yourselves with abundant generosity. Trust that even when your own needs are not being met, something larger is at work. Have faith and live that faith. You can do it. We can do it.